The Olympics are just around the corner, and one of the areas that is going to be in focus for most of the world is security. And that's after more than 50 years ago, 11 Israeli athletes were murdered at the Munich Olympic Games. Rory Steyn is the co-founder of NSA Global Security Consultants. He's also a sports nut and a member of the BizNews tribe. So we're taking this opportunity to talk to him about what security is going to be like in Paris over the next few days. Hey, Rory, good to be talking to you, man. We can't let the moment pass, though, without starting off with your son, Kyle. Was that the Blue Bulls versus the Glasgow Warriors, where your son is the captain of the Glasgow Warriors? Was that a proud moment for the family, no doubt?
Alec, it was huge, you know, and I suppose we're going to get to talk about it. I was in the USA as head of security for the three American venues for the T20 World Cup. And on the 15th of June was when Glasgow Warriors beat Munster in Limerick. And on the 16th of June was my last match that I was responsible for. So I started immediately to make arrangements, scrambled around, got home on that Wednesday and got to the first training session and watched these boys. And I could not believe how calm they were, utterly focused. Everyone knew their job, but so calm. And I looked at this and I thought, those Bulls are in trouble. And so it proved to be, yeah.
You were the only one in South Africa, it seems, who felt that way outside of the Glasgow Warriors camp.
Yeah, that's right.
A fine moment for the family. And you say focus, so that's pretty much what you do. Just unpack a little bit for us. We do know you as the bodyguard for Nelson Mandela, and then you retired and went off into the private sector, and you built an incredible business, a very much a global business.
Yeah.
Just help us with some of the big events that you look after.
Sure. So I left the police in June of 99, on the 16th of June, obviously a historic and well-chosen day for Madiba to hand over to President Mbeki. And on the 17th of June, Alec, I flew on the dime of the United Cricket Board of South Africa, as it was at the time, to England. England were hosting the Cricket World Cup. Dr. Bacher sent me there to go and observe how a World Cup is hosted, because the ICC had whispered to him that we would get the 2003 one. And even prior to that, because remember, Australia toured in 93, late 93 into 94, literally months before the election that elected Madiba took place. So there were sports tours happening, and those guys required protection even before I'd left the police, even before I started on Madiba's team. And you are quite correct, Alec, in that the 1972 Munich Olympics were a watershed in both security and sport, because it was the first time there had been other issues, safety issues, going right back to BC days in the Circus Maximus, where stuff collapsed and people were injured, but where athletes were targeted by a terrorist organization, Black September, in 72, was a watershed moment. I've been very fortunate, Alec, to work a number of World Cups in cricket, rugby, and football, but I've also been at six Olympic Games working security for our clients. The head of security for the International Olympic Committee is a friend of mine, and I was privileged to visit his office in Lausanne last year, and we had a long chat about the Olympic Games in Paris. And I will admit to being more than a little concerned. Threats have been made. There were, of course, threats made by ISIS against the T20 World Cup a couple of months ago. That came to naught, basically because there was a very strong policing and law enforcement and intelligence operation and apparatus in place. And I'm pretty sure, because I've read some of the reports already, that the French will do the same. And they are making all the right noises. But the Olympic Games is such a big footprint, Alec. I mean, you've got surfing in Tahiti, for heaven's sake. You know, you've got Marseille, you've got football in Lyon, right on the eastern side of the country. It's not just Paris. So it's very, very difficult to cover that footprint. And as somebody said, and I don't want to misquote them, but, you know, somebody said something along the lines of, you know, we've got to be lucky every day. The criminal or the terrorist only has to be lucky once. So I'm a little concerned, but I know that there is a huge amount of planning that has gone into what the French will do around those Olympics. And I'll tell you something else, Alec. During the 2010 FIFA World Cup, we consulted to FIFA had at the time six what they called global partners. That's their top tier sponsor. They're above a sponsor. They're so big. And we protected the hospitality programs of three of those six sponsors, Coca-Cola, Visa, and Sony. Coca-Cola and Visa are also Olympic sponsors. My point is, and I made it at the time, because our intelligence operations as a nation were probably at one of their lowest points at 2010. All the party political factionalism within the ANC about who you supported was happening. I was completely off the ball. And one of the points that I made, and I make it now for the Olympics, is that one of the things that gave me confidence as being involved in security for the FIFA World Cup was the fact that then we had 32 participating nations, and every single one of those 32 participating nations was feeding intelligence into the South African environment. And the same thing is happening. You know, the United States, for example, do not send an Olympic team. They probably send the biggest delegation. You know, it's them, China, and I think Australia in that order. They send hundreds of athletes. They don't just send their people anywhere in the world without doing their homework and talking to the French. The US will set up a major events operation in Paris. I know that because I was part of it in Athens, in Beijing, in London, in Pyeongchang, in Vancouver, and in Rio. So I just want to point that out. Intelligence agencies of the participating nations will be looking at this and assisting the French authorities with intelligence. So it's very unlikely that if any threat is made or there are any discussions happening, people planning terror or crime, and that it's going to slip through. It's just a matter of, you know, can we meet that challenge? So I'm cautiously optimistic, and that's the word that I used before the URC final, but I am concerned that the footprint is just so big.
Are you involved at all in these Olympics?
No. For the first time, I am going purely as a spectator. I leave on Sunday. My sister-in-law, Jill's wife, who you know, Jill, made me promise 3 years ago that I would take her to an Olympic game. So I said, well, pack your bags, we'll go to Paris. So we're going for a week. We've got some tickets, and the weather is great. And the Olympic Games, Alec, is like nothing else. It is truly the pinnacle of human achievement. If anybody listening has a bucket list, put an Olympics on there. Just go to 1, 2, 3, or 4 of the events and just go and attend it. Just go to the host city and experience the vibe. It is incredible. You've got the best athletes in the prime of their careers. You've got the best officials officiating. And you've got these wonderful venues. I mean, they're going to play beach volleyball underneath the Eiffel Tower, for goodness sake. You know, they're going to play the tennis at Roland Garros. Stuff like that. The opening ceremony won't be in a stadium this year for the first time. It'll be all along the River Seine, on the boats, along the banks. That's on Friday night. So make sure you're watching. It's going to be incredible. The Olympic Games are fantastic.
Rory, what about the security of those superstars are going to be there? You remember from the weekend, Xander Scheffler, who won the British Open, he's participating in the golf. So is Scotty Scheffler. LeBron James, who's probably the greatest athlete in the world. Do these guys have their own security details?
They do. So it's a kind of a hybrid. The U.S. Olympic Committee, in the case of LeBron James, and well, all of those you mentioned are Americans. The U.S. Olympic Committee have the benefit of federal agencies, so the FBI, the State Department, protective agents are with them. But in the case of those truly high-profile athletes, like particularly the Dream Team, the NBA guys, you know, the NBA will probably be involved there. And they have many vendors. We as NSA have worked many times for the NBA. They have a fantastic social corporate investment program called Basketball Without Borders, and it comes to South Africa on an annual basis, and we've worked with them there, we've worked with them in Senegal, in West Africa, so I'm pretty sure that the NBA will be involved assisting the federal authorities that protect those high-profile teams. And you can imagine, I mean, if Israel send a team, you can imagine they're not going to send their athletes there unprotected. the Brits and the Aussies will do the same. So yeah, there will be a mixture of both government and private security, and especially around those big names.
It's almost like there'll be as many security personnel there as there are athletes.
Yeah, not quite, but it'll be a good number, absolutely. And you know, like anything, Alec, that how you protect an athlete when, because your problem is when an athlete is at their least accessible to his or her protection detail is when they are performing, and that is when they are at their most high profile. So you can't go running onto a basketball court, you know, in the middle of a game, for example. So the strategies that have to be applied all require a huge amount of communication and coordination. So you've got these discussions and talks going on all the time. How do we plan for this? What are the immediate action drills? What do we do? You know, in a cricket match, if a guy runs onto the pitch, he jumps over the advertising boards, the LED screens, and he starts running onto a cricket field. It's a much bigger expanse of turf than a football field, a rugby field, a hockey field, or a basketball or tennis court. But you don't know what that person's intentions are. So you've got to have an action drill. We always tell the players and the match officials, go to the center of the pitch, congregate at one of the two wickets, and we'll send a quick response team, a reaction team on there, because we don't know whether the person is just ecstatic and he wants to celebrate somebody scoring a milestone or taking 5 wickets or whatever, or whether he's got a weapon in his hand and he wants to do that, you know, those players harm. So those conversations have to take place. One of the challenges I had in the United States was trying to explain to American law enforcement how cricket works. And not just the cricket security. I mean, there's more than enough security knowledge in the United States. We all know that. There's great event security. They do these wonderful events. But do they know cricket? No, they didn't. What about the integrity, the anti-corruption elements that we had to teach them? You know, we take away players' cell phones and smartwatches and anything else that is called a communication device is taken away the moment they step off the team bus to enter the dressing room, which isn't even called a dressing room in cricket. It's called a PMOA, a players and match officials area. And that is locked down, tight, no communication devices in there because of the history of corruption in cricket and match fixing and spread betting and everything, Alec. So, yeah, your problem with those high-profile athletes is that they are least acceptable when they are at their most high profile, and that's a challenge.
And the lower-profile athletes, and now you think about South Africa's rowers, for instance, the rowing team, they'll be out there rowing in an area which presumably would be very much more difficult to secure than a swimming
pool. Exactly, and Sean Keeling and Lawrence Britton, I almost want to say the great Sean Keeling and Lawrence Britton. You know, Lawrence Britton's got the most incredible story. He had cancer and he finished his chemotherapy, I think something like 18 or 20 months before those Rio Olympics. And he got back in that boat, he got fit, and they won a silver medal for us. Those guys are icons of my charity that you know about, Alec. And I was at that event when they won that medal, and I've seen that's a 2,000-meter stretch of flat water, 2Ks, not to mention the cycling. I mean, we just saw the Tour de France, and every year I watch the Tour de France and I celebrate this extraordinary event and the beauty of France, and I just wonder to myself, you know, when is some idiot going to pitch up there and just slip through the search cordon and do something terrible? So yeah, you're right. It's those endurance events that require more than a stadium, you know, that require 200 and something kilometers of roadway to go and do the road race, men's and women. The women will be just under 200 Ks and the men will be just over 200 Ks if they're riding a bicycle, trying to win a medal. And, you know, they shouldn't have to worry about crazy people. So yeah, it's a real concern. So I guess what I'm saying is that there is a huge intelligence, multinational global intelligence operation that has its nexus somewhere in Paris, and it feeds in there, and there is a plethora of police, you know, the gendarmerie, who are what we would call a national, the Americans will call it a federal operation, and every local police department, agency, force in those little towns that host all these different Olympic events are all involved in a massive planning. And it's huge, you know, and the International Olympic Committee, like FIFA, like World Rugby, rely heavily on the host nation, because the host nation signs responsibility when they submit that bid. And that bid is submitted 7 years in advance. Sometimes it's submitted 11 years in advance, as was the case of FIFA and these Olympics, where they actually bid for two Olympiads, two FIFA World Cups in one bid. So, you know, governments can change during that time. So you have to also get the opposition parties to sign those bids to say that if we come to power in between the bid and the games, or the bid and the World Cup, we will abide by the undertakings that are made. So the IOC rely very heavily on the French in this case to secure, I mean, it's their country and they've got to secure their borders. They've got to know who's coming in, both athletes, spectators, and people with mala fides.
Are they good? Are they good at that? The French, you'd think the old days, the French Foreign Legion was held up as being one of the crackest armed forces in the world, or
for sure,
units in the world.
You know, many people point fingers at the French and make jokes about them and that sort of thing. But the people that are sitting behind those computer screens that are scouring the web and the dark web and looking for the intel, they know exactly what they're doing, Alec. Yeah.
The Americans, not so much at the moment, if you're listening to the hearings that are going on in Capitol Hill after the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. Now, there's been lots on social media about this, including had he not moved his head at the critical moment, that it wouldn't have been his ear that was shot, but something a lot more dangerous. What do you make of all of that? And now the criticism that's being leveled at the Secret Service in the United States.
You know that you would know, Alec, that I spoke to Linda von Tilburg, your colleague, on this matter. And I said in that interview that I never want to be that guy that prejudges something like this incident and everybody all of a sudden is an expert. You know, it's like South Africans, all of us are Springbok selectors and we all know better than Russie and his team, you know. So I never want to prejudge an incident like that. However, I've always said, give the investigation time to run its course, because then we will know. You can look really stupid, Alec, by jumping up on a soapbox and pointing fingers the day after an incident like the attempted Trump assassination, and then the facts emerge down the track and you look like a complete fool because you didn't wait for the facts. I will always wait for those facts. That said, I watched one of the many reconstructions of the incidents is on YouTube, where they used there's a 3D modeling company that looks at all the positions that the two sniper teams on the north and the south, and where the shooter was on the roof. And they actually, because there were 8 shots fired, it appears, not just the 5 that they originally thought. There were 3, and then a pause, and then there were 5. And they do the modeling of those, and you on that modeling, you see the bullet narrowly miss President Trump, and he does turn his head, and had he not done that, he probably would have been murdered. So it would appear that roof was left exposed. It would also appear that the Secret Service had handed the control of that particular rooftop where the gunman lay to the local police department. And that often happens when you have either a manpower crunch, so you've got to then give various tasks to various law enforcement. But the point is that even so, even if it was handed over to the local cops, somebody needed to at least check that those people were in place there. So all of those things are facts that this investigation will reveal. And I think, Alec, that we will probably find, as I said to Linda, if you dig deep enough and scratch hard enough, you're going to find gaps where there could have been improvement, probably in any plan. So let those investigators scratch. Let them publicize those findings. Let there be no cover-up. Let us know that people who slipped up there need to take responsibility, and we need to fix those. I mean, that's been the case right through history. You know, the Americans have lost 4 presidents to assassinations, and they've learned lessons along the way. They always have. And I made the point to Linda that when we worked with Madiba in the mid-90s, Alec, our mantra was watch the hands. And we dominated the 5-meter radius around our president. What that means was that we were there, the protection team. And if somebody was going to attack our president, it would most likely be with a weapon, a handheld weapon, a firearm, a knife, an improvised weapon, or whatever. That's why we dominated that radius. When suicide bombers became a thing a number of years later, that radius went from 5 meters to probably about 25 or 30 meters. Because now you detonate a vest full of Semtex and you kill a principal at a vast distance. So that meant you had to bring a whole new raft of resources and measures into play. Electronic surveillance, spotters and counter-sniper teams, all of that came into play. And then, of course, the game changed again, Alec, a number of years ago, probably 6 or 7 now, years ago with the advent of drones. Because then, before we figured out how to make that drone land, you know, you could intercept it digitally and technologically and make it, force it to land. We didn't know how to deal with that thing. You fly a payload right above your VIP's head and you commit the assassination, commit the murder that way. Short of shooting it out of the sky with a shotgun, we really didn't know what to do at that time. And the point I'm making is right through all of that, right through from the 5 meter radius, through the Semtex vests, right through to now drones and the whatever the next thing will be, the greatest danger has always been a world-class sniper with the proper weaponry, the proper ammunition, ideal weather conditions where the wind isn't an effect, because the best snipers, we know this, can take out a target at a kilometer away, a mile away, 1.6 kilometers. What do? It's always, that's why you dominate the high ground. That's why, quite correctly, you put your counter snipers up onto, you think like a sniper. You put your teams into the positions that a sniper looking to kill would occupy. And therefore, this investigation needs to reveal how come that rooftop was not covered and why not.
Fascinating. Here in South Africa, we've also had an attempted assassination. Was fortunately unsuccessful. But here, it's not a presidential candidate, but an advocate who's working for the revenue services. We also have on X, the former Twitter, a commentator who's apparently had R1 million target put on their head because certain people don't like what they are exposing. This commentator has had to leave the country for their safety. It appears as though at the very highest level, there's lots of issues. But my word, when you go further down, and these people wouldn't have Blue Light Brigade and certainly not people like Rory Steyn protecting them. How do they protect themselves? How do they make sure that they too are not the victims of foul play?
You know, Alec, I have so much respect and regard for our whistleblowers, just men and women, South Africans of extreme integrity, that will say, even if it's going to cost me financial harm, even physical harm, possibly worse, I have to speak out. And you remember that Graham Joffe also had to leave the country when he exposed the goings-on at our own Olympic authorities. Remember, he was threatened, his life was threatened, and he left. Yeah, still out of the country.
He's still in America, yeah.
And I'm just appalled at this sickness that has become one of almost impunity, where if you need to settle a debt, if you want to remove somebody who has the facts about your malfeasance, you just go and hire a hitman. And the Daily Maverick, I think it was yesterday or the day before, said anything between 5,000 and 100,000 rand. Now, that's not money for these people that have made millions, even billions, through their crooked activities, such as the case that you alluded to. And it may have been Amabungani, I don't know for sure. But somebody just in the last week or two published a report on political and other assassinations in our country. Alec, it's in the hundreds, man. It's somewhere around 140 or 160 assassinations this year, and we're not yet done with July. You know, if we all know KZN, you know, politics in KZN, whether it be in the local town councils or whether it's in the provincial government, it's just fraught with this kind of thing. We know about the political murders that happened around the Mbombela Stadium in Limpopo. around the time of the FIFA World Cup in 2010. And it hasn't got any better. In fact, it's probably got to the point now where there's too much of it, almost, as I said, to the point of impunity. Something has got to be done about this. And we have to, you know, look to the likes of our friend Ian Cameron and Senzo Nkunu to take this on, as they take on the construction mafia and everybody else that seems to be just acting with impunity, taking the it's vigilantism in its rawest and rudest form when you are able to kill your political, economic, and business partners in order to get ahead or stop them from testifying against you. It's mafia stuff from the mob when you take out witnesses and cut their tongues out and leave the body there with no tongue in it. That kind of rat behavior. I'm really concerned about it, Alec.
How well protected are Senzo Mchunu, the police minister, and Ian Cameron?
I'm not sure about Ian because he's very new in his post. Senzo Mchunu, as a cabinet minister, will certainly have protection from the police VIP protection unit. He and his cabinet colleagues. As to how effective that is, well, I've long been banging the drum that our police training has suffered tremendously over the past few years. What we should be doing is, if our intelligence is, has their eye on the ball, Eric, they should be examining criminal tactics. They should be communicating that to police training units, and the police training units should be in their training that thin blue line that every morning wake up, kiss their wives goodbye, strap on a bulletproof vest and a firearm on their hip, and they go and protect you and me. That is what needs to be happening, and that is what has been lacking. That's why I've been banging that drum, because I feel for those men and women. That's why we started a charity that looks after the orphans and widows of cops killed in the line of duty, and there are too many of them, Alec. Too many little boys and girls, and it's never the fault of that little boy and girl if their mom or dad is murdered by a violent criminal while they're protecting, all of us. So I look to two things. We need to vastly improve the level and quality of our intelligence, our police intelligence. What are the criminal syndicates doing? Who are they? What's driving it? Where are they funded? And our training. We can't leave our men and women exposed, ill-equipped, without vehicles, without proper radio and other communication equipment. It's criminal.
Yeah, and if you compare the expertise that you have, the fact that you as a South African company is trusted to look after these great events around the world, and yet here at home we just struggling so I'm sure that there is a lot more collaboration and coalitions to be done on that front. But before we go though, Rory, Formula One. Now, our new Arts and Culture Minister, Gayton McKenzie, you've been at the BizNews conferences where he's been.
Yes.
He's a real charismatic. I've just finished his book, the first book called The Choice. What an inspirational story he has. It's how he grew up, how he went to prison, what happened in prison, how he got out of prison by being a whistleblower, incidentally.
Yeah.
Which is a fascinating story. And I'm
well, if I may interrupt you, you've just inspired me to buy it. I'm gonna buy it and take it on the plane with me to the Olympics, because
you won't be sorry.
He's just a fascinating man. You know, he really is. And I actually feel that he has a lot to offer. Yeah.
He tweeted this week, that he'll be failing in his duty if he doesn't bring Formula One back to South Africa. This is a subject you know a bit about. Help us.
I do, Alec. We were on the cusp, and I mean it was a few signatures away of South Africa hosting the Formula One Grand Prix back at Kyalami this year. April this year it would have been. And all that stuff around Putin's attendance at the BRICS summit scuppered that. We all know that it was reported in the papers at the time. There was a American private equity investor that put the majority of the money up. The Gauteng government put some of the money up, but there was a team assembled, and I was asked to be a part of that team because it was the same team that I worked with at the 2007 Cricket World Cup in the West Indies. It was stadium architects. It was venue development specialists, hospitality specialists. The finest in their trade were brought on board by this private equity funder. The talks with F1 had already gone through. The delegation left and went to Monaco at the time of the Monaco Grand Prix last year to sign it. And that was when all this shenanigans about. And the Americans just said, listen, everybody down tools. We're not signing everything. We can't deal with a government that think like that. And that thing was scuppered. And it went to Belgium, as we know, for another 2 years. It couldn't have gone only to Belgium because Belgium's condition was if it comes back to us, we get it for 2 years. So they get it now and next year. So the first chance we get is the year after next. But what I'm saying, Alec, is that team with its plan is all done. Is all done. And that's a message that I really hope gets to our new Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture, because it's just the funding now. The plan is there. It's written. It's a good plan. The designs were phenomenal. The designs incorporated all of our African vibrancy. You know, there's a cycling footwear brand, Alec. I don't know whether I should mention the name, but everybody will know it, that brought out a range of socks, cycling socks, that had the designs of all of our African tribes. There were Ndebele designs and Zulu designs and Sotho designs and Pedi and even Swazi designs. And I showed my mate, who's an architect that I've known for 20 years. I said, look, if you want to do some designs and you want to know what to do in terms of decor, here's a good place to start. And they used those designs, Alec, in the prospectus that was put to F1. And it's just brilliant. It is so South African. So I'm just hoping that, Lewis Hamilton gets his wish to bring F1 back to the African continent. And really, with our wonderful Formula One history, I mean, we lost the Grand Prix to the Aussies. Australia didn't have a Grand Prix until the FIA took Kyle Army away from us because of our political policies. And it initially went to Adelaide, as you will recall, and now it's in Melbourne. And that's how we lost it. So we need to get it back, man. And as I'm saying, the plan is there. The designs are there. They're good. They can work. And, if I get to be the strategic head of security for that Grand Prix, I will pour my heart and soul into that, because I love South Africa. I love our continent, and we deserve to have truly make Formula One global again. And it needs to come to Africa, obviously.
Just don't invite Putin to the next summit or whatever is going on.
This place never ceases to amaze me. This GNU included, but it can also amaze me how we find ways to shoot ourselves in the foot sometimes, Alec. But I've got a lot of faith in our people. I always tell my mates, and one of them was that guy that's become a bit of a sensation on YouTube, Tim from Egg Chasers. He came out here for the Craven Weekend to watch the Irish Test. He's coming back for the Rugby Championship. And I said to him, Tim, what you will find when you come to South Africa is, despite all of our natural beauty and our magnificent wildlife and our wonderful lodges and our beaches and our mountains and our vineyards, I said, you're going to find the beauty in my country is our people. Black and white, we've got the most wonderful people, Alec. And there's no reason why we can't continue to amaze the world. And we've just done it again with this GNU. Please, Lord, long may it last.
Tim from Egg Chasers put together a fabulous summary of his tour South Africa. And in fact, he mentioned your name in that as well, which was...
Yeah, because I took him for a steak and he said it's the best steak he's ever eaten. Of course.
Well, for an Englishman, any steak in South Africa will be the best they've ever eaten, perhaps.
And when he comes back, he's coming to that All Black Test at Ellis Park. The Sunday after that, I'm going to cook him a poiki, a spiced lamb poiki course pot. So he'll get another taste of South African cuisine.
And just give him a whole lot of biltong, which I see.
Oh, he loves the stuff.
Well,
yeah.
To go home with. But we have got a lot to offer. And Rory Steyn, thanks again for your insights. Lovely talking.
You're so welcome.
And we look forward to the next time. Rory is the co-founder of NSA Global Security Consultants. I'm Alec Hogg from business.com.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks.